Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1 with It's for Women. The car insurance you can sort online anytime.
Well, my next guest this morning is one of Ireland's most successful and treasured traditional musicians, a founding member of Irish-American band The Gloaming. In his newly released memoir, Shared Notes, Martin Hayes recalls days working as an illegal immigrant on Chicago building sites, to sharing a stage with Paul Simon and Sting, to performing for Obama in the White House. But regardless of where he was or what he was doing, his fiddle was always near at hand. Martin Hayes, good morning.
Good morning, Miriam.
Thanks for being here. And you are with your fiddle as well, and you're going to be playing for us. Listen, take me right back, will you? You grew up on a small farm in East Clare. What are your most vivid memories of your childhood?
I suppose, well, music in the house. It was a household where musicians were coming and going a lot. I have these early memories of, you know, all the work on the farm was done with two horses. We had two horses, work horses. There was a big open hearth fireplace like you see in the old cottages. Mm. So it was kind of a lifestyle and a way of being that I think, you know, probably hadn't changed much from the 40s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. It was just like, you know, hitting that era when things were changing, maybe in the beginning of the 70s. Like by the time I'm 10, yeah, we kind of move into sort of begin to develop a more modern kind of life, I suppose, you know.
And you fondly recall your long walks to and from school. What was your route?
Oh, well, it was, we kind of went up and downhill, you know. There was, like, it was equally difficult to get there and get back, you know, because it was the same amount of hill climbing, it seemed, in each direction. But it was a beautiful thing in a way, because it was unstructured time with the neighbours' kids, like, on a road. You know, we had to make it to school and make it back, and it was 2 miles. It was uphill, downhill. And we did it in all kinds of weather, and rain and wind and frost and whatnot, and fog, all kinds of interesting times. But it was a playful time, a discovery time, and a time of, you know, where just, I don't know, it was kind of magical in ways, you know.
Now, your dad, PJ Hayes, he himself was a renowned and gifted fiddle player. He took his art seriously. What was it like to grow up with someone of such talent?
Well, you see, I suppose being around that much music, like my father and Paddy Canny and those kind of people, I think on some level I might have taken for granted and assumed that it was a very natural and normal thing to do. And I suppose with that in mind, one kind of engages and pursues this with a feeling that, of course, it's entirely possible. Surely it is. They're doing it. Why wouldn't I? But it also empowered me to feel like that I had access to the kind of the real thing, quote unquote, or that I was, you know, I felt entitled to the music in some strange way, or to be deeply involved in it. Like, so I didn't feel like an odd thing. I never felt like I was coming at it from the outside. Like, let's put it that way.
I assume he had a huge formative musical influence on you. I mean, what do you remember about the way he played?
Well, he played in the Kelly band for most of his life. And he liked to play for dancers. So one of the main parts of his playing was kind of rhythm and pulse and drive and energy. And my uncle Paddy Canny then, on the other hand, who used to play with him as well, was very lyrical, sweet and gentle. And when you put the two of them together, you got this kind of beautiful combination that seemed to complement and support each other in some particular way that I always found interesting.
And your mum Peggy, how do you remember her?
Strong, determined, unflappable, powerful woman.
Yeah. And you remember, actually, this is, I think, the first piece you're going to play, about going to Punkrana with her for your first flat kyol. Do you remember what you played?
I do, yeah. I had practiced, like, I think, two or three tunes on the way up. You had to play three pieces, I think, to compete. Like, I'm just 13, just turned 14, and you know, I haven't really been anywhere in the world. But my mom travels to Buncrana with me, along with her brother, my uncle, and his children. And we, you know, so it's just my mom and me at the flag kyol competition then. And I played a reel called The Graff Spey.
You're going to play that for us now, Martin?
I will indeed. Off almost just like I did then, I think.
Off you go. Thank you. Quercus Martin, come back over. That's the Graf Spey. You describe yourself in your memoir, you know, something of an oddball in your teenage year. You love traditional music. Lots of your mates liked pop. You describe music as an emotional refuge. And then for many years, I think you were frustrated, Martin, not doing what you wanted, working on building sites in cold Chicago winters, not playing the music you wanted to play. How frustrating was that?
Well, it's quite frustrating, I suppose, if you have something inside of you, something that you know, something you want to do, something you're capable of doing, something you love. And if you're, I think in particular, if you're transgressing that in your life, you're creating a kind of a painful situation for yourself. So I suppose the moral of the tale is always to kind of follow your heart and to follow your deeper passions and to follow that truth, even if you have no idea where it leads. It is still better to do that. But of course, it's easier to be told that in retrospect. I can say that I wish I had known that at the time. I kind of played in bars playing music that I didn't want to play, and I at first was in construction sites playing, you know, working in jobs that I had no particular affiliation to or inclination towards whatsoever. But anyway, I mean, I suppose that there's a point in the book there which you were very delicately didn't bring up, but I'll mention it anyhow. There was a St. Patrick's Day event in Chicago where I end up smashing my fiddle over a fella's head, a fella that I was playing music with, which seems quite out of character with me, because it's like almost 35 years ago that this happened. But it was a moment of kind of, you know, I suppose when somebody snaps, where you kind of go, okay, I literally reach a breaking point. And I did reach a breaking point, after which I suppose I gathered myself together and started pointing my ship in a correcting course, as it were, I suppose, and you know, deciding eventually to commit to a much deeper path in life and in music and in every other way. I mean, sometimes, you know, if you don't learn the lessons you're supposed to learn, life will simply come and teach them to you. And the things you refuse to do, you will eventually have to learn how to do them in some way. So in some sense, you know, I kind of got a smack in the face, you know, and go, like, say, wake up, Martin, you know, just, you know, do something with your life. Yeah. Well, yeah, I think we all get opportunities every now and again to do that. And so I got my opportunity. I basically had spent 10 years of life failing and making one mistake after another and really getting it all wrong. And all the time, just simply being afraid to engage with my own deeper passion and belief and heart and not really pursue the thing. Because I didn't believe traditional music was a career path. So I never tried to choose it. And in the end, I kind of said, okay, I guess this is what I love and this is what I know how to do. And let's see where we get to after this, you know.
And where you got to was amazing. I'm going to play another piece for us now, Patsy Geary's Jig. Tell me about this.
Well, it's a simple tune. I mean, one of the things I've learned in life is that it's not necessary to complicate things. It's sometimes not necessary to complicate music. And sometimes the melodies themselves are just contain natural beauty. So a lot of what I do in music these days is about, you know, extracting that natural beauty and letting it be heard and letting it be experienced. So here's just a very simple tune that in its own basic structure I think is beautiful.
And it's one you also play with the Dloaming. You go play that for us now, Martin. Thank you. Patsy Geary's jig there, Martin. Thanks for that. You've had such success with the gloaming as well, haven't you?
Yeah, it was a very fortunate, in some ways unexpected kind of trajectory of things. Yeah, I mean, you start these things, you have no idea whether anything can be successful or not. And you basically have to do these things without that knowledge or without that expectation even, you know.
You want to mention Tony McMahon.
Yeah, I do, because Tony had been a huge figure in my life musically. And of course, for all of the people in the traditional music world, there's a kind of a sadness today at his loss. He died yesterday, he passed away. And he's a huge figure for a lot of people. And, you know, just a person that showed me the deep, passionate possibilities in music. And so he'll be very, very missed. And we've all been kind of reeling from it a little bit over the last few days. Although, I mean, he was old and in poor health and stuff like that. He's still, that moment when somebody passes is, you know, we've lost a very enormous and powerful figure in this world of music.
Well, Martin, thanks so much for coming this morning. Now, I know you're going to be in conversation with Donal Dineen at the National Concert Hall on Tuesday next. Tickets for that event are available from nch.ie. You're going to be in glore.ie doing a concert in Ennis on Thursday for anyone who'd love to go. And your memoir, Shared Notes, is published by Transworld on October the 14th. It's always lovely chatting to you, Martin.
Oh, great to be here. Thank you, Maria.
Thank you so much.